This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Boo. Did I scare you, Bertie?
Yes.
Well, I hope I did, because today on this episode of Fantastic Adventures with Dean and Bertie, we are exploring the concept, or the very real feeling, of fear. You totally killed the mood on that. It was supposed to be spooky.
I don't know,
you just went,
oh.
Is supposed to be a zombie?
I don't know what I was going for.
You're trying to filter feed? What are you trying to do?
I think that was just air escaping my... I think I was asleep.
You were just asleep?
Yes, yes. Okay, Dean, I just want to ask you, greatest fear.
My greatest fear?
Yeah.
Ooh.
Besides death, we've covered that.
You not liking me. What are you laughing for?
Well, I've got some news for you, honey.
What's your greatest fear, Bay?
I don't think it's my greatest fear, but I...
Then why are you sharing it?
I am a bit scared. No, because my greatest fear is death, the immortal coil. But one of my greatest fears, or at least it's up there, I think I am a bit scared of the dark.
The dark?
Like, when I look down a dark corridor, you know what? That's scary.
That's scary.
That's scary.
I'm a little boy and I'm scared.
I'm scared of the dog.
I'm scared.
No, I am. The good thing is, though, having a cat makes little noises you hear much more bearable, because it's like, oh, it's just the cat. Oh, what? There's the knife coming through the door? It's the cat.
It's the cat. It's the cat.
Oh, who's this blooded axe just sort of sitting in there? It's the cat.
It's the cat.
It's the cat. Of course it is. I'm scared of the dark. I'm not scared of heights.
I'm pretty scared of heights.
Oh, you're scared of flying?
Yeah, I mentioned that, haven't I?
Yeah.
I really don't want to die in a plane.
Yeah.
Really don't want to do that.
No. Okay.
I'm scared of...
I'm scared of being lonely. I'm scared of rejection.
I'm scared of...
I'm scared of failure.
Okay. Oversharing now.
Sorry, I'll undershare. I'm scared of nothing. I'm scared of how fit I am. It's scary.
I'm scared of how fit you are, Bertie. This is ridiculous. I'm scared we'll never finish this podcast.
All right, come on. Movies, films that shit us up. My main one has always been The Exorcist.
The Exorcist?
The Exorcist shits me up because when I was a kid, and I think still to this day, The Exorcist was the first horror movie I saw where my fear wasn't born just out of like, oh my God, I don't want to get murdered, or oh my God, I don't want to get my dreams invaded. It wasn't as simple as that. It was more complicated. It was, I don't want my innocence to be perverted and polluted and taken over by a demon.
How old were you when you had this?
I must have been like 12, but I was like...
You were 12, one of your active worries was being possessed
by
a demon.
I watched it and I saw this innocent girl, this like rosy-cheeked innocent girl, and by the end of the film, she is transformed into this monster and it's completely against her will. And I just thought, like, that is horrible. I thought your body being just possessed and taken away from you. And there's something about The Exorcist and how it's an old film that, like, because I think we spoke about this the other day, how comedy and horror are so intertwined.
Yeah.
And a lot of the scariest films from that era, the scariest stuff, you can look at it from an angle of being quite funny.
Right.
Like in The Omen, when I think it's his nanny goes, do this for you. And it like crash zooms in her face and she hangs herself. It's scary, but also very ridiculous. And you could see it as being,
I mean,
quite
that's
funny.
Hilarious.
Yeah. Yeah.
But then instantly makes me want to laugh.
But then The Exorcist, a girl comes down the stairs, pisses on the floor, like walks down the stairs backwards, vomits a bit of blood. It's ridiculous. It's ludicrous. And
it sounds like a party to me.
And that's what I like about it. There's that scene in The Exorcist where
I keep thinking you're saying The Exorcist.
The Exorcist.
And I was like, yeah. So when you were talking, I was like, what's The Exorcist? Is it like the conversion therapy demon?
Yeah. Like, The Exorcist.
They're going to make my daughter cis.
Yeah.
Cis.
But there's a bit in The Exorcist that I love where they're doing the exorcism and it's all cold and it's all horrible and it says, you know, your mother sucks cocks in hell, all that stuff. And it's really ridiculous and like goofy. Yeah. But then it just cuts to her mum downstairs.
Sucking cocks in hell.
You could say hell's downstairs. Mum's downstairs.
Yeah, I'm sorry. No, anyway, so it cuts to the mum downstairs.
It cuts to the mum downstairs just crying. Like just sort of very realistically crying. And that's like, I've always liked...
That's like a metaphorical cock in hell in a weird way.
You could say, yeah. I mean, whenever we get upset...
I'm just trying to get that media degree in.
It's okay, you're doing it.
There's no such thing as a wrong answer.
Yeah. But yeah, The Exorcist fucks me up. And just the sight of a poor girl with her face all scratched up, like, talking in a voice like this. And then you see the demon really briefly.
Did she speak like that before, the demon?
Yeah, she smoked 50 a day. That's why the demon came for her. The demon is actually a demon of anti-smoking.
What are you doing? He's got a smoker's voice.
What are you doing? Are you smoking? Don't make the same mistake as me. I've got gravel in my throat. I'm going to possess you now. Come here.
We're like, crap film. So that scared you?
The Exorcist just messed me up. I don't know. Innocence being corrupted. It's horrible.
She's 12.
She's a little girl.
At the age of 12, one of your fears was your innocence being corrupted. I don't know if I even knew what my innocence was at 12.
I think it was more like
Mummy, I don't want my innocence to be corrupted.
It was like an underlying thing. Do you know what I mean? It was like...
Sure.
I only now realise what it was that scared me about it, but at the time I just got a feeling.
Looking back.
In hindsight, I'm like, that's what scared me about it.
Oh, I see. You're making sense.
Is as a child thinking, God, I really don't want my body to be possessed by a demon.
That's so weird because I really want that to happen to me. The film that shits me up is The Thing. Came out in 1982. I think The Exorcist was 1974.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like that. Yeah. That film scared the crap out of me. It's about a group of scientists. They go to the Arctic or somewhere snowy and they discover an alien that basically is able to assimilate people, basically take on their appearances. So the whole thing is, who is the thing? And it, you know, it could be this guy or it could be this lady or whatever. But I remember seeing that as a kid, and the idea of having yourself taken away and you not even being sure of it. Mm. Is a horrible feeling.
That's the thing, isn't it? They don't even know if it's happened to them.
Yeah.
Yeah, God.
Presumably, that's implied. I don't think it's outright said.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But even people, like some of the people who clearly aren't the thing are scared that they are the thing.
God.
And the movie is famous for its practical effects.
They're incredible.
They are harrowing.
They're so cool.
It's dread incarnate.
A guy's tummy cracks open with teeth, right?
And bites a man's arms off.
And then
the head of that person falls off and becomes a spider.
It sprouts legs. Yeah, it sprouts legs and starts crawling around. And it looks fucking real.
Someone got paid to come up with that.
That's incredible.
How much money would you think someone would need to be paid to come up with such upsetting ideas?
I love it. That's movie magic. You look at it, you don't doubt it at all.
Yeah, and but just as a kid, though, it was, you know, you don't tend to see dead bodies as a kid. I don't think I'd seen them. Maybe I've put them at the back. But like those images of seeing, basically it's the human body being twisted and like crafted in a way that shouldn't make sense.
Yeah.
But it kind of does.
Yeah.
That you look at it and go, that feels more real than it should.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that's obviously part down to the practical effects because there's like a gooiness to everything.
Oh my God, it's so tangible.
You get texture. You don't really get that from CGI stuff.
No,
sometimes you don't.
It's getting better, but I think... knowing that it's a real thing that exists does a lot to immerse you.
But it upset me a great deal. Just the idea of it. It was like, because there's no shape to any of it. Mm-hmm. It's like with Alien, when I saw that, I went, oh, cool, Alien. It's got a big, like, willy head and stuff.
Oh, interesting, yeah.
But like with The Thing, there isn't a thing. Like,
that's interesting.
It's just what it is.
It's scary in the unknown of like...
it's what it happens to be. Sometimes it has teeth, sometimes it has claws, it has tentacles just coming out, doing God knows what. To you, I don't know, like, to your face and, like, eating you up and stuff. It didn't make any sense to me, and I hated it, but I was fascinated at the same time.
So it's sort of, it's different to my thing, but similar in the way that, like, the thing that scares you about the thing is these people not knowing what's happening to them, but basically they've lost all agency and their bodies are just being, like, fucked up.
Yeah.
And that's sort of, again, The Exorcist, it's just a little girl being possessed by, like, it's kind of losing control at the hands of a being you don't understand.
Yeah.
is very scary.
We're very deep, aren't we, Ben?
We are!
Like, to bring it down, is there anything... Because I've had these times when I've sat in my bedroom at night and I worry about scary things happening.
Oh, my God.
So I saw The Grudge with Sarah Michelle Gellar?
Is that my gosh, is it?
Buffy is in it.
Yeah, I believe so.
That's her name, right?
But wasn't that a remake?
Yes, it was a remake.
Yes.
But I saw that movie and that the girl in it, the Grudge girl, scared the shit out of me. Like, it was crazy.
That's the thing.
The DVD for it scared me.
Yeah.
I remember walking into Tesco's. Don't know if we could say, other supermarkets are around. But it was in a Tesco.
Other supermarkets are available.
Other supermarkets are available, but it was in a Tesco.
Yeah.
And I saw the DVD for The Grudge. And if you don't know what the art is, Google it. But it is... some long black hair and then a singular eye to stare at. I had to I turned it round in the shop because I couldn't stand looking at it.
That's so interesting.
But do you ever have do you ever imagine scary things happening to you when you're in a room by yourself?
Hell yeah. I mean, gosh,
your number one? Like
my number one thing
you don't want to happen.
I mean, I think the idea of the thing is, my childhood home was a big, creaky Victorian house. So there was always noises.
Is that the one I lived in?
That's the one you lived in.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Because I was like, whoa, wait, when did you live in Eddie Murphy's Haunted Mansion? Like, what are you doing?
I'm just lying.
Yeah, I was like, what are you doing? What are you lying?
But there were always noises. There were always, creaks. They house sounds, or they call it, the house settling or whatever. But, I don't know, especially, my bunk bed in my old room looked directly out into the garden, and I've always found something creepy about a garden with, you know, that horrible light you have in the garden that on at night, and if you see any little movement, and because shadows are cast so heavily out there, so my dog went out there, you just see a big shadow just suddenly appear, and it freaked me the fuck out. And if I turn away from it, that's worse because I know it's behind me.
Yeah,
you know. So I pretty much, I mean, I once tied. I once took a walking stick we had. No one was using it, don't worry.
Okay.
I once took a walking stick we had, broke the handle off. So it was just a big stick.
Oh my God.
Sellotape knives to both ends, just in case someone, because I was worried someone was going to come and get me.
Is that when you realised you were the monster all along?
Yeah. It's like Freddy Krueger's look, I was scared someone was going to get me, so I put this glove on, put some knives on it. Self-defence, do you know what I mean?
I can imagine him running through the boiler room and he catches his hand and goes, wait,
am I
the bad guy?
He looks at his reflection in the blade. Look at me. Yeah.
Look what I've become.
I put on a fedora. I put on a hockey mask. I've got I've got a double-ended blade stick.
A hockey mask and a fedora. Have you just?
I'm doing a collab. I'm doing.
Are you doing a collab?
Yeah, I'm doing
a
collab. I'm being an amalgamation.
Freddy is Jason. The new movie.
Well, yeah. In the sequel, they have a child, don't they?
Yeah. They're just like, wait, crossovers are out. Why don't we just say that a pre-existing character was already a pre-existing character? Freddy is Jason.
Have I?
Alien is Predator.
Have I told you? Me and my friends, when we were younger, we used to make little horror movies, and we were working on one where it was Freddy versus Jason 2, and there's a Freddy Jason hybrid.
Mate, that's so funny. What would that,
he has the hockey mask, the fedora, the striped
but
thing.
Half of the hockey mask, or what?
No, just the full hockey mask.
Interesting,
He's got, he doesn't have the charisma of Freddy.
Oh.
I know. Look, I've gotten better
so
at
So you've
writing.
Made him Jason then?
No, but then he's got the stripy thing and the glove and the powers, but the strength of, it was brilliant.
It sounds like you just made Jason and gave him the dream powers. Could you take away the charisma of Freddy? He's just some silent dude.
No, he talks through the mask, but it's a bit muffled.
Right. He says the word bitch a lot and stuff like that.
Hey, bitch!
Yeah.
Yeah, but...
I do like this.
But that's me. That's me. That's my...
Jeddy is his name.
That's my story, yeah. Jeddy.
Jeddy!
Jeddy. Yeah, I like that.
So, funny enough, I used to do that. My first ever movies were me basically forcing my brother and sister to be in my films, and they would wear... my brother would wear a Freddy Krueger mask.
Yes.
And he'd chase my sister or whatever, or it would be flipped.
It was fun.
It was fun.
What was it about horror? When I was a kid, horror movies really did it for me.
Because
I was,
they're really easy
them.
To understand.
Interesting.
Because with a horror movie, the most of them go, here's the monster, here's the main character. They run away from the monster. That's well easy for a kid to make.
There's no grey areas, really.
There's no conversations. Yeah.
That's so interesting. Yeah. And I loved when I was a kid, especially Nightmare on Elm Street. It never really scared me, but I thought Freddy was so charismatic.
Mm.
And I thought the...
fit.
And fit. I just thought I don't know, like the way someone could be so evil and like know it.
Yeah.
As a kid, I was like, this is fun to watch.
Yeah. Always have a morbid fascination with things you're scared of.
Yeah, no, me too.
What about things that aren't supposed to be scary that totally come off as shit terrifying? What about that?
So much of that. It's weird. Like, often the stuff that scares you isn't really. Like I remember in Pinocchio. Mm. Do you remember the little boy? The boy, also I should say boys, plural.
Pinocchio.
In Pinocchio, the little boys who transform into donkeys.
Yes, they go to the little shame island.
Horrible.
I genuinely don't understand what universe Pinocchio is in.
It's twisted. There's wolves in fucking suits, like waistcoat, walking around.
Yeah.
The height of men. And then, yeah, and then this kid, he's screaming out for his mum as his hands transform into hooves. Then the big guy throws him in a cage with all his other friends. Pinocchio just leaves.
Yeah, you know, he doesn't rescue them.
We don't know what happens to them. He never gets reunited with his mum, and that fucking scared me.
Yeah.
I was like, what if I turn into a donkey?
I don't know what these people were thinking when they were making that. They were like, what are we trying to... We're definitely trying to scare the shit out of kids into... Yeah. We don't want them to drink, we don't want them to smoke.
Yeah.
Even though the people who were making these movies were definitely drinking and definitely smoking.
And that was the whole thing, yeah, because he got drunk, right?
Yeah, he got drunk off...
just some beer or something.
Piss.
And it pisses and it turns you into a donkey.
Yeah, it was bizarre. He was like smoking a cigar and he got sick. Do you remember?
Yeah,
he was like,
oh,
not for me. But then, yeah, he just sods off. That was horrible.
And it also scared me when I was a kid, the fact that Pinocchio wasn't helping and the fact that Pinocchio was just kind of freaked out by it and left.
I actually thought human boy Pinocchio was quite creepy.
Oh my gosh, he was. Yeah.
I prefer puppet Pinocchio way more.
Yeah. Isn't he like, why does he want to be a... This is a different conversation. Why does Pinocchio want to be a boy so bad? Is he not immortal when he's made of wood?
No, because you can set him on fire.
I can set a human on fire, Dean.
That is true, but I'd argue...
I set you on fire.
Yeah, that's true. I'd argue Pinocchio is more flammable than me.
I would agree with that.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What stuff are you scared of as a kid that maybe wasn't supposed to be scary, but is?
I'm scared of Furbies. Do you remember?
Yes, I do.
Do you remember Furbies? Yeah, the toys, the little, like, sort of, I don't know, furry duck creatures or something.
Yeah, furry duck creatures, I think that's fair.
And they go, oh, rule, and stuff like that. And I remember my aunt gave me a newspaper clipping of these Furbies. And she was like, look at these. They're pretty interesting, aren't they? They learn what you're saying. They eventually learn English words. They recognize you. You know, when you walk in the room, they'll say hi. Also, they're really indestructible. Like, my memory's hazy, but I remember reading in this newspaper clipping that someone ran over it with a truck
and it
didn't break.
Whoa.
Which, I don't know if that's just like...
Cockroaches and Furbies, mate.
Yeah, no, cockroaches. They're two things that will survive the nuclear apocalypse. Furbies and cockroaches. And then they'll combine together.
For bockroaches.
For bockroaches. But, so little did I know that was my aunt gauging a Christmas present. She was trying to figure out if I wanted one of these things.
Yeah.
You know, being a kid. I wasn't one of those kids who would say, I don't like this thing or whatever. I just keep it sort of silent.
Yeah.
And I went, oh, yeah, these look cool. Come Christmas, I've got a Furby. I start spending time with the Furby and realize I hate it. I hate it so much. I hate its wide eyes. I hate its beaky, tiny little beaky little mouth. I hate the fact it doesn't say anything. And occasionally says English words. I'm really happy, Mama. And you go, what did you just say to me? What did you just say? And I remember... I put it in bins and stuff like that. I would literally try and go out of my way to throw it out
and
of
it
the
find
house.
Its way out.
Well, no, my parents would always go, oh, Dean, you left it in. I go, oh my God, you're still here. And I remember I put it in the box where our Christmas tree goes. So my dad's putting the Christmas decorations away and I throw it in the Christmas tree box and I go, that's it. It will go in the attic and I won't see it for a year. Amazing. I didn't think it through though. So me and my brother shared a bedroom. And we had a bunk bed, and I had the top bunk at the time. And I remember sitting in my bed that night,
no.
And I swear to you,
no.
From the ceiling, we hear,
oh no!
And for the first time ever, I understood that Furby's words. That Furby was saying to me in Furbish, I know what you did.
Furbish!
And I'm coming to get you. You wait, 365 days from now, you're dead.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Done.
Dean, oh my gosh. I know. What a Furbalicious story.
It came to me. I went, why am I not talking about that time I was talking about Furbies?
I used to skin them.
I'd
peel the fur off.
So much scary.
I'm very normal. I'd tear the fur off, and then it'd just be this weird robot in the beak. Because the beak had rubber like skin over it. Tear that off as well.
I bought hundreds of Furbies and made their skin into a little coat.
Oh my gosh.
I know, right?
Furby cruelty. Deary me. I used to also, Action Man, do you remember he had like the Action Man toys, his enemy was Dr. X, I believe was his name.
Oh, he had like a little laser eye and stuff.
Yeah, and he freaked me out. I don't know why. The toy, he'd always like, you'd squeeze him and he'd go, I'll kill you.
Because he reminded you of yourself, of what you could become.
Yeah, absolutely. So I tried to kill one of them.
He also had a goatee.
He did, and it changed every time. It became a bit of a silver fox towards the end. But I tried. There was one, I hated him so much. He was so like, he just unsettled me. He was so buff, and I just
Action Man's
like it.
Dad.
Action Man's dad. I think that is a thing. I think that is the law. I tried to destroy him. I drowned him. I bashed him up. I like burnt him. I did everything, and he just kept talking. He kept talking to the point where like,
similar to when you and me hang out.
I broke it to the point where it actually wouldn't stop talking. But it was like this gargled, like, watery version.
Oh, no.
Of like, I'll get you, Action Man! Like, it was horrible. Like, his arm was torn off. I, like, tied him in a tree, left him there.
Oh, my God.
I don't know why.
You hung him from a tree.
I was really, yeah. I'm having some realizations right now. What frightening film has come out this year.
Oh, this year?
Yes, Hereditary.
Hereditary.
The big one.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a big spook.
Mm.
There was a lot of words about that one.
A lot of words.
Yeah. So if you don't know what Hereditary is, it's a movie. It's produced by A24.
Yep.
I don't know what the director's called, but it's
either.
A guy.
Yes.
And he directed the film.
Yes, he's a person.
He's a person.
Yeah.
But yes, I saw the posters for this movie on the tube. And one of the sort of the quotes from the critics that they put on the poster, they chose to put it there.
Yeah.
It said, this generation's The Exorcist.
Mm-hmm.
That's quite a lofty statement.
It's a lot of hyperbole.
A lot of hyperbole.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously, you know, I'm a grown-ass man and I have level expectations. I don't throw a hissy fit when a film doesn't fully deliver.
No.
Because that would be embarrassing.
No, who does that?
I have no idea. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
Continue.
But, I went with you to go see Hereditary.
We did. That was my second time.
Yeah, that was
second
time.
I was very interested in hearing your thoughts and seeing your reaction to some of it. But essentially, the rough plot is the matriarch of a family, an old woman, dies, and her daughter and her children and her husband are left in this big house. And, I mean, that's
kind of it. That's as far as you can go without spoiling it.
Stuff happens.
But this generation's The Exorcist, it ain't. Because not because it's bad, because it has almost nothing to do with The Exorcist.
It's its own film almost.
I have no idea why that's on the poster.
I think because there's a woman in a nightie in it who gets a bit freaky.
Oh yeah, of course. I think
that's literally, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's weird. I think, I don't know why people can't just let films be their own films and stop comparing them to other films.
I have no
weird.
Idea.
Weird. It was a different time. Like, filmmaking was a different process. Like, the world was a different place. Like, just don't bother. Just, like, let it be a bloody film.
Yeah.
But yeah, Hereditary. I adore the first two thirds.
Yeah.
I think they're, you, midway through the film, you turned to me and you said, this is fucking sick. And I thought in my head, Dean is either going to love this even more by the end or he's going to be a little bit deflated and a little bit disappointed.
Yes.
And it was the latter.
Yeah, I was a little bit deflated in the last 20 minutes. The last 20 minutes were not great. But they were, but at the same time, it wasn't like awful.
The last 20 minutes, you could argue, were a little bit like derivative and a little bit familiar. You know, it's stuff we've kind of seen before, a very good version of stuff we've seen before.
Yeah.
But still, but for a film where the first two thirds are so original, so, I mean, there is a sequence
I mean,
should we just get into spoilers?
Can we go spoiler? Can we do that?
Spoiler alert!
Okay, yeah, spoiler alert, spoiler alert, spoiler alert. You've got enough time. Pause or skip.
Bye.
I don't know.
Yes. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.
Leave.
Now it's just us.
Okay, now it's just us. Yeah, yeah,
now
yeah.
It's the cool people.
Now it's the cool people who've seen Hereditary.
Look, that scene with the car crash and her head getting torn off.
Crazy.
Stunning.
Yeah. Like, it's one of the best scenes ever.
I was sort of breathless when I first saw it. And even your reaction, you covered your mouth.
Yeah, like, so my favorite moments in horror are when you can't breathe anymore.
Yeah, man.
That you're like, I am suffocated in...
And they're rare.
And I am suffocated in the atmosphere of this scene. And it was when he is stood in that car thinking about the fact that he's just... Sorry, this is grim. He knocks his sister's head off with a lamppost by accident.
While she's choking on a cake that
Well,
he
no,
made
she isn't
her...
choking anymore. She ain't got a head.
No, but...
She ain't choking no more. She choked.
So, she croaked, baby.
She croaked, baby. Spectacularly.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's stood facing the front of his car, just looking out on that road and going... He can't believe what he's done
he's
and what's
sweating.
Happened.
His eyes are like wet. Like he's not crying, but he's like...
And at one point, he almost asks if she's okay or something like that.
Okay.
Yeah.
He's like mumbling, he's muffling to himself.
And then he goes home. He just drives home with his sister's body in the back of the car, just drives back to the house, goes in the house, sits on his bed. And I'm sat there because they're playing that essentially in real time. Yeah. And in that moment, I was going, oh my God, like we're going to see the real time reaction to this. So usually you jump cut to someone being distressed. It was like, no, we're going to like, so they did this wonderful thing. He sat in bed and it cuts to day in that same moment, I think. It like cuts to daytime in the same shot.
And you're on his face. He hasn't slept.
Yeah, he hasn't slept. Yeah. Of course he wouldn't.
No.
And you hear his mum walking downstairs. She's like, I'm going to go get the car. And you're like, oh my God. And then all of a sudden, screams.
The most blood-curdling scream you could imagine. And then it cuts to later that day. Her husband is trying to calm her down while she's just sort of clawing at this carpet in their bedroom, screaming her daughter's name.
Screaming her daughter's name and
howling.
Saying, I want to die.
I just want to die.
And, like,
and that speaks like, to the fucking strength of the film and the strength of the first two thirds. Because, like, the thing that I find is the hardest to capture in horror films is, like, characters. Because you always want it to be in service of the scare. That's the priority. But this film, like, so quickly, you get an idea of the dynamic of the family. And when the mum goes to that support group, she does that incredible monologue.
Yeah.
You fucking feel for them. And you feel like you know them.
And they're not tropey either.
Yeah, they feel like such a legit family. The son's a little creep. The son's like a weirdo who, can't talk to anyone. He's, like, really awkward. And he, like, just smokes weed. And
He's got tropey sort of... factors, but like the character himself and how it's played is like it all feels very realistic, and they feel
the character stuff is so good, and that's why that blood curdling scream of a woman who's just lost her daughter is more scary than most like fantastical shit I've seen in horror movies, and that's why the last 20 minutes are a little bit gutting.
Yeah, they're a little bit going. So massive spoiler. I mean, we've already spoiled maybe the biggest moment in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
But the family were doomed from the start.
Yes.
It turns out that the matriarch of the family was actually the head of a cult.
Yes.
And that they were the family, she had essentially sacrificed her own family to this ritual to bring back the ancient god Paimon.
Yeah. The eighth king of hell.
The eighth king of hell, Paimon.
Yes.
So it turns out it's one of those movies.
Yeah.
Which I'm fine with.
Yeah.
But then.
It didn't feel super organic to me.
No.
It transitioned from one film to another.
Turned out that they were going to use the boy, the annoying teen kid, to use him as a vessel for Paimon to eventually possess and come back.
Because Paimon was born as Charlie, who is
the
girl
kid.
Got cut off. But Paimon doesn't want to be in a female body. He wants to be in a male body.
Yeah, it's important to the ritual that it's a male body.
Yeah.
So it becomes this whole thing. And I was fine with it.
Yeah.
But then then there's these scenes there where I think, obviously, don't quote me properly on this.
Yes.
But the director said there are moments in that movie that were definitely there to please the studio. They said they
needed. Has he said that?
Yes. They said there are context heavy moments that he didn't want in. So you know when she opens up the photo album?
Yeah.
That basically shows her mum being showered with gold coins and cult. That apparently was not supposed to be in the film. That we weren't even supposed to be sure there was a cult. I would have been, in a weird way,
bro,
I would have been totally more chill with that.
I'm fine.
But it becomes 20 minutes of the greatest hits of all the cliche horror scares you've ever seen.
You have, I mean, it's like what I said. I've seen a woman in a nightie floating around a creepy house before and like kind of being a bit frantic and being possessed. I've seen it.
And I will say, to the at least the first scene when that last 20 minutes are about to kick off, the first scene of Ooh. It is great. The son wakes up in his bed.
And it's a big wide shot.
Yeah. There's a lot of symmetry in it. I know a lot of people have said Wes Anderson, but that's just because they see one thing and see the other on the other side.
Yeah,
but
no, exactly. It's nothing like Wes Anderson.
Yeah, it's nothing like Wes Anderson.
It's like Doll's House is very much a big motif.
Yeah, and so from that framing, it begs you to look around.
Yeah.
It begs you to look around. And if you look to the top left-hand side of that frame, you can see his mum in the corner in the shadows. And it's very dark.
She's like just on the wall. It's like almost, Peter Pan.
Yeah, it's almost, you're not supposed to be able to see it, really.
That's the thing.
I love it. There's no music. There's no cues. It's begging you, the viewer. It's almost like it knows you're watching a movie.
And I've seen it a few times at different cinemas, and the different screens, her visibility changed every time I saw it.
Yeah.
So one of the times she was very obvious. Yeah. But then one of the other times, which was better, you can just about make out her
shape.
Well,
the lighting changes when it returns to that frame.
Yeah, because
she's more submersed in darkness the first time.
There's a light outside or something that highlights her a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. And then the light comes on a bit more and you see her a bit more.
Yeah.
But it just became kid walks around a house and spooky things happen for 20 more minutes.
Yeah.
And it's a shame.
No, and the thing is,
great.
The thing is, it's not my place to say, that isn't the film you were making. I saw the first half was this thing. And I'm sure there's stuff throughout the film that definitely hints at stuff to come. There's little bits and bobs. I just think, to me personally, if it was gonna become a bit more supernatural, I wanted there to be a transition. It really broke my heart when the mother character, the moment she does snap into like possessed mode, her character's just done away with.
And suddenly, she just goes.
Suddenly the boy is the main character. And I just thought she was such a strong, I mean, that conversation they had at the dinner table.
It's great.
Where she just talks about, they talk about like, and that sequence, the dream sequence where she's burning him. She relives that memory where she poured paint varnish
on him. Yeah.
He's like, why do you hate me so much? She's like, I never wanted a child. And they're both screaming.
Yeah, I never wanted to be your mother. I've seen that twice now, and the cinema gasps every single time.
She grabs her mouth and she's,
it's so good.
And I love the stuff in the film about like, it is all about, again, the whole matriarch and how there's someone at the head of the family pulling the strings and you're sort of living in her shadow, and how even beyond the grave, she's still manipulating, she's still controlling everything. And the way, because
literally beyond the grave.
Yeah, the main character, the mother character, she is an artist. And the art that she creates are these little miniatures, little like doll's houses. And she recreates moments from her life. She even recreates the crash scene of her fucking daughter's death, which is a quite like darkly funny moment in the film. And again, that ties into themes
of like... Yeah, she says, she goes, it's a neutral view of the accident.
Yeah, it's like, as
if. And the dad's like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, he's like, you coming to dinner or what? Yeah.
She's like, I'll make dinner. He's like, no, I've made the fucking dinner.
Yeah, it's great. It feels so real.
Get down here now.
Yeah, but that ties into themes, again, that's her trying to get some control, because in her life, she feels like she's never had control and her mother's always been there. And in the end,
She needs to see a neutral view because she needs to shake that feeling of she is doomed. Like there's something pushing her life to be terrible.
If she can manipulate these tiny little houses, then, like I said, she's got control over something. But you could argue... the first shot of the film is... Or one of the first shots is you zoom into the doll's house.
It is the first shot.
And they're in there.
Yeah.
It's great. And that's... Yeah. And I love the idea of again, like, being at... It's not... Everything's destiny in you. And what it... Do you know what the director said? He said he wanted to make a horror movie from the perspective of the sacrificial lamb. He wanted to make a horror movie from the perspective of the thing, the pawn, you know, the thing that's just going to be used as a tool.
Which, I mean, that's essentially what the film is.
Yeah.
And like...
It just isn't that... Yeah, I don't know.
It does it really well up until the last 20 minutes. And then it decides to be a big old spook.
It's still a damn good film. It's still very well made.
Yeah.
There's some imagery in it that feels a little bit iconic, maybe.
Yeah, like I would say so.
I'd say the little girl and her like orange... Like, and then the, you know, the little tongue pops.
That's so horrible, that.
Everyone did it. Every screening I went to.
Did they really?
People started being leery, going, oh.
Yeah.
And I couldn't tell when it was in the film, when it wasn't.
I mean, our opinions on cinemas is a whole other episode.
Yeah.
But, so I think we've banged on about Hereditary for maybe too long.
Yes.
But let's think, what haven't we covered in the realm of spooks? We've done movies and we've done personal fears. What about interactive spooks?
Interactive spooks.
Video games.
Yeah.
Spooky games.
I think the big one you and me have both played semi-recently is Alien Isolation.
It's a bit of a good game.
Yeah. Basically, I mean, we've talked about Alien on this podcast before. Yeah. We love Alien. It's a great movie. Alien Isolation is... It's a weird return to form for the property of Alien.
Yeah.
Because it's set right after the original film. The locations and the art direction is lovingly, like, so lovingly recreated from the original. The vibes are all there.
It's kind of... I think it's the best recreation of
it's incredible.
The first Alien.
It's incredible.
It's like, it's just so spot on.
The sound effects, like every little detail, the quilting on the sofas is exactly
crazy good.
Like it's 1979 again. And it basically plays Ellen Ripley's daughter on a space station. And but yeah, I mean, there's what is great about it is obviously, look, it's you being haunted and stalked by the alien. And a big thing with the game was the AI. It was amazing.
Yeah.
The AI was really unpredictable. The alien could come out of nowhere, but it would still, and there's a great feature, wasn't it, where if you had a PlayStation camera,
oh,
you
man.
Could turn it on if you move.
I bought one just for this.
Yeah.
So it turns out Alien Isolation comes with head tracking and noise detection.
Mm.
So with head tracking, you could, if you were behind a wall, you could slowly turn your head to look around the corner, which was really cool.
And you played that.
I loved doing that. And then noise detection was awesome.
Yeah.
So in Alien Isolation, I don't think we've explained what you actually do in the game. Mm. But you spend most of your time hiding from the alien.
Yeah.
Which is one thing it did great. It made the alien spooky again. Yeah. Like, legitimately
terrifying.
For the
first time in decades. Yeah.
Yeah, first time in God knows how long.
Yeah.
But, with noise detection, I remember I was hiding inside of a locker and I had a coughing fit.
No.
Like, I just say this thing, like, oh. And I just go, oh, no. And it just shows up and rips the locker door open and grabs me. And I was like, and I forgot about the noise detection. And I went, that can't be because I coughed.
I think it was, mate.
Yeah. So I started like messing around with it. I started like, because
I'm over here.
Yeah, basically, like, because if you do it like far away enough, it does it on levels. So like,
oh, wow,
I was going, can't find me. And it would like come into the room. And I'm like, yeah, you stupid fucking idiot. Like, you don't know shit.
Oh my God.
Like,
that's so crazy.
But it was so like responsive to you.
Yeah. And you crawl in like vents and stuff throughout the game and like, you can just, I would always play with headphones on.
Yep, same.
And you can hear the rattle of it crawling through the vents, and it was so immersive. And I remember the moment it first appears in the game, because, again, in the spirit of a film like Alien from that era, it's a slow burn. Like, the alien doesn't appear properly until a little bit of a ways into the game, and it's very unceremonious. You're just walking, and suddenly steam comes out of this, like,
the alien just shows up.
It just shows up, and it's like, oh, I have to just get behind this thing now.
It was
and
effective, brilliant. Though, because, like, when it showed up, you just went, oh, shit,
it was
alien.
Engaging. It wasn't...
you're like, ah! And, like, you think it's a cutscene. It's like, no, it's still the game. It's just running. You're like, oh, God, what
you're
do
like,
I do?
Oh, God, I'll just get under this hospital bed. I'm not prepared
and
for this.
And you get under the hospital bed, and then the alien tail is like... right near you, and you're like, God. What do I do?
When you see its feet walk about, and when it enters a room and then decides to go out or not, and all the animations of it killing you are fucking horrible.
Yeah.
It shoves its bloody tail through your stomach, pulls it out, it does its little mouth boy, comes out.
Yeah, little mouth boy.
That's a scary game.
It's
a scary game, but I loved it.
It's incredibly effective. Yeah. Although, I'm going to say one thing. It has the one criticism that I don't think I've ever criticised a game for.
Oh, I know what you're going to say.
In my life.
Go on.
It's too long.
It is long.
It is 45 hours in length. No alien movie is that long.
Are you sure? I'm pretty sure Prometheus.
It felt 45 hours long.
Yeah. It's a great game.
Ridley apologised.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was 45 hours long.
Another scary game I know you played, which I played a little bit of, I didn't play too much, was Resident Evil 7.
Resident Evil 7.
Ooh.
It's a spooky game.
Yeah, and you played it in VR.
I did. I played it for 10 hours straight in VR. It was the best.
10 hours straight?
Yeah, 10 like, hours straight. I loved it. I was.
You were
was,
in that world for 10 hours?
Yeah, I was
crazy.
Properly excited to just play it.
It's mad.
And because I'd heard it was a return to form for Resident Evil. Even though, it's once again, it's one of those weird things where I didn't grow up with the original Resident Evil games. Like,
no,
I didn't.
Me neither.
I played Resident Evil 4 on the Wii.
Yeah.
And it was a great game. Mm. Awesome. But I'd go, it's my favourite Resident Evil game because it was the only Resident Evil game I'd played. But Resident Evil 7 was showing up, and I was like, I mean, I like Resident Evil.
Yeah.
It's a good spook, and they're well-made games as well. Like, yeah. They're not like, you know, like there's a lot of like, there's a lot of horror games that get made, and they're like, they're sort of a bit cheap.
Yeah, yeah. No, they're very polished, very polished.
Yeah, Resident Evil 7, like, a bit like, they're a bit like the Transformers of horror movies a little bit.
I mean,
bit.
The
like,
Resident there's... Evil series, for those who don't know, started as like, is it, I mean, what would you, it's like, it was camera angles.
It's like a third person. Sort of, I think that's kind of it. Third person, but the camera is like, it's more top down.
It's almost like this interactive horror movie and like, it was supposed to be scary. It was the main point. And it became very action based.
Oh yeah.
Eventually to the point where it was like ridiculous. Like it was just balls to the wall.
It wasn't scary anymore.
No, it was balls to the wall action. Like there was a sequence where you motorbike off a fucking skyscraper.
Yeah.
Which I remember Resident Evil 6 or something like that.
Oh, Resident Evil 6 was heinous. Such a bad game. But yeah, it was like tonally, it was all over the show. And Resident Evil 7 managed to like just went, right, let's step back a bit.
Yeah.
Let's not make a global horror story.
That's what it was.
Yeah, a global.
A globe-trotting.
How like, can anything be scary on a
horror
global
scale? Espionage. Oh,
wait, turns out it can. It's the news. But like, it's just like you bring it back a little bit and they just went, why don't we put it in a random little house, like a sort of swamp house.
Yeah.
I mean, like a Texas Chainsaw Massacre type thing. And... No, it was cool. Like, you personified the threats, which was fun. Each of the, like, basically each of the family members were like a boss. So you knew you were going to face up against them at some point. So there's obviously that anticipation of who is it going to be next.
And I remember when I played it, you brought it over and I played it. And I got to there's a bit with, you're in a garage and there's all this, that you try and get in a car and chaos ensues. And you were looking at it like, this is not how it went down for me.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of, like, choice. You went in the car and it was like that boss fight just happened in a totally different way. It was strange.
There's a lot of different branching paths and stuff.
Yeah, it was just very well made.
Yeah.
And like, it was very scary.
Yeah.
Which was nice. I mean, Resident Evil 7 does eventually, in the way that Hereditary sort of drops it a bit at the end.
Oh, I never got that. Interesting.
Well, Resident Evil 7 gets action-packed at the end. It becomes like,
you end up on
like a, spoilers for Resident Evil 7, but you end up on like a sunken ship that's filled with like monsters and you just have to shoot your way through it.
Aww.
Yeah, it's a little, and honestly, the final boss is this huge monster thing and it's like, yeah, it like, honestly, I went, what are you
doing?
And then at the end, Chris Redfield shows up.
Oh my gosh.
Who's the main character from Resident Evil 5, the very game that nobody liked.
Yeah.
So we're sat there going, you've just
and
weirdly...
And he's like a dude bro secret agent guy, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So everyone was like fucking terrified that Resident Evil 8 was just going to go, oh, psych, it's not, even though you quite like the horror thing, it's not horror anymore.
Yeah.
But they're now making a remake.
Of Resident Evil 2.
Resident Evil 2.
Yeah.
And it looks great.
Yeah, but it's not, it's different? Like, it's not,
well,
is
it's
it different?
Like
how's
a,
it different?
They've made it like Resident Evil 4.
Because the trailer for that, when we watched E3, there was a trailer for this Resident Evil 2 remake, and it starts off, the trailer starts off the perspective of a rat going through some cupboards.
Yeah.
And I was like, Dean, are we getting a game where you play as a fucking rat? I'm so up for that.
Yeah,
that
sounded fun.
I'm so up for that. But then it was something else, which is fine.
Yeah.
But I still want my rat game. So.
I still want my rat game. I want my rat simulator, please.
Please, now.
But yeah, like, Resident Evil 2 looks good. It's like, it's very strange. Resident Evil 7 is this first-person horror game.
Mm-hmm.
Then Resident Evil 2, the remake, is a third-person horror game.
Yes.
Where's this brand going? I don't understand.
I love it. It's fun each time not knowing what the fuck it's going to be.
Next one's going to be a trading card game.
Next one's going to be a Minecraft DLC skin pack.
Fortnite skin. A mobile game.
Yes. Come on. All right. Well, thank you, Dean, for getting scary with me.
No worries. I enjoyed it. Thank you, Bertie, for getting scary with me and for being so fair.
Thank you. It's my pleasure. Guys, again, thank you so much for tuning in. We really appreciate it. If you want, we'd love you to give us a little rating because we love validation and we love feeling talented and important. So.
We know it's a little bit of an ass. You don't have to write an essay.
Yeah.
Just, I don't know, tell us your favourite thing about Bertie.
Do a haiku.
Do a haiku.
Do a haiku about Dean Dobbs.
Oh, God.
Yeah? Okay, that's your assignment this week.
Okay, your favourite things about Bertie and a haiku about me.
Yeah, and 5-star ratings, please.
Only 5-star ratings.
We want blind loyalty, come on.
If you give a 2-star review, please justify it with a review.
Oh, my God.
I'd love to watch that.
And that'd be amazing.
Yeah.
Soon we'll try and cover that if you give us a really honest 2-star review.
Sick.
Brilliant. All right, thanks, guys.
Take care.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.